Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United. I'm Jerry, joined by my co-hosts Jamie and Chris. How you guys doing?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, everybody. What's up?
All right. It's I would like to say it's quite a change in feeling from a year ago today where we were talking about Spider-Man 3. I would like to think that we all have different opinions about the movie we just watched over the weekend, Iron Man, because that's what we're going to be talking about today. Is that fair to say?
As opposed to our feelings about Spider-Man 3?
Yeah.
I think we're all, I think it's pretty safe to say that we're probably all in unanimous agreement about Iron Man.
Even
as
Chris?
As opposed to Spider-Man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so. Actually, I haven't heard a lot of dissent from this movie at all, anywhere. If people I've been talking to or most of the reviewers, I think, what's it got, like a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes?
Amazing.
It's gotten amazing reviews. I mean, just unbelievable reviews.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, the unanimous applause for this movie, and literal applause, too, in the screening that I saw. I don't know about you guys, but people went absolutely apeshit in the theater. Of course, I saw the first showing on Thursday, so the nerd deck was a little bit stacked in Iron Man's favor on that one, but, you know.
I can't say that we had the nerd deck. I think people liked it, though. They weren't... I can't say that we went to the 11 o'clock show. I can't say they were, like, overjoyed, but enough people knew to stay through the credits.
Oh, yeah.
To put it, you know, a lot of people stay behind. So, to give you, the feeling of the crowd. But, I mean, it was just very enjoyable. I don't know another word for it. Just wonderful and enjoyable feeling watching it.
So we're talking the audience reaction. I think that our audience was really into it. From the get-go, too, I just feel that there's not. Obviously, this is a hugely successful movie. What did it gross? $100 million this weekend.
It grossed $100 million altogether. I think taking in the Thursday night numbers is $104 million. If I'm not mistaken, let me just go check that real quick.
Which is fantastic.
It is.
It's fantastic way to start the summer. I don't think in terms of a character that Iron Man is. You know, I'm not a comic book guy, so I don't know. Is this recognizable as Spider-Man? You know.
No, you're right. I mean, even they said it's like even if you read a lot of the reviews and even reading interviews with them, they refer to it as a second tier character.
Yeah, which in terms of popularity, that could be true, but especially me not being a comic book guy and watching this movie, I think that's unfair because I think it's a fantastic character.
It's so much better than anyone would give it credit for. You know, if you read the script or anything. But he's just so much more interesting when he's Tony Stark. Not so much Iron Man, but when he's Tony Stark, he's just so interesting.
A great real-world comic book character, comic book hero. And, you know, you notice what my complaint about Superman Returns. One of my complaints in my review of that was, you know, first of all, Superman has become such a bland superhero. Secondly, why can't he fight, the war on terrorism? Why can't we put him in a real-world conflict? I mean, isn't part of superhero worship kind of a wish fulfillment in a way? And here you do have that with this...
You have it full-on.
Yeah, this new Iron Man character. And I think, first and foremost, that you can't start a discussion on this film without expressing, and I know we all feel the same way about this, how incredibly, like, proud we are of Robert Downey Jr., I think.
Oh, no doubt.
This is... We've been following Robert Downey Jr. since the beginning of his career. He's obviously always been such a great actor, and we've been praying for him. You know, get it together, man. You know, and I think this is his ultimate comeback. And I think he's in a place where he deserves it. You know, he's 100% there for it. And that I just watched this. I was beaming with pride. I don't know him, but I was like beaming with pride almost because he's incredible.
Well,
incredible.
I read a story. I guess it was like Thursday or Friday at the Century City screen showings of the movie in the I want to say AMC Century City. Robert Downey Jr. and John Favreau were at the screening, like, and were shaking hands with people and thanking them for going to see it afterwards.
Yeah, that's
great. That's incredible. That's unheard of. I don't hear about that often, but I thought that was incredible.
It's a little bit, what you're talking about, Jamie, it's a little bit like what happened with Johnny Depp with Pirates of the Caribbean, which is actually a movie I didn't like, but I've always loved Johnny Depp for years before that movie came out and always kind of felt like, what's going on? Why isn't Johnny Depp making movies that everyone loves? Why aren't more people seeing Johnny Depp movies? I've always felt the same way about Robert Downey Jr.
And right.
That same kind of, you know, like proud moment. It's like somebody I've been digging for a long time. Now everybody else is digging him too. Even if it's, you know, and Iron Man is not the best movie Robert Downey Jr. has ever made. But,
right. But he makes it.
Watch him.
He makes it one of the best comic book movies I think ever made.
Oh, yes. Very much so. Yes,
and it was the first and possibly most important thing that Jon Favreau got right was casting him in the movie.
I think it all rests on Robert Downey Jr. I mean, if that didn't work, I don't think you wouldn't have a movie.
And it's brilliant. I mean, and even as much as we love Robert Downey Jr., we can probably start a list of potential Iron Mans, and he wouldn't be on the top of our list because we don't necessarily associate Robert Downey Jr. with that genre picture.
Right.
But hearing his name.
Remember who was originally trying to get this project off the ground was Tom Cruise.
Right.
Now, nothing against Tom Cruise. We've talked about Tom Cruise a lot of times. I like Tom Cruise, and I'm a defender of Tom Cruise. But one of the things that works so well about Iron Man, one of the biggest things, if I had to say three things that work so well about this movie, either number two or three, number one would be Robert Downey Jr. Number two would probably be the comedy. And I can't see Tom Cruise, as, you know, gifted as he is, pulling off the level and the brand of comedy.
He doesn't have the dry
well
wit
in this movie. No. It's a funny movie, Iron Man.
Yes, it is.
Well, I do think that Tom Cruise can be funny in a movie, but he doesn't have Robert Downey Jr.'s like rapid fire sarcasm.
I don't think many people do.
That's apparent in Zodiac, by the way, too.
Yeah.
I laugh my ass off in Zodiac. There are moments that he has in that film that are hysterical to me.
Oh, there are. There are in that and Charlie Bartlett. There are a couple of films that he's made since if you want to mark the Singing Detective as his turning point, where he gets his act together after all the tabloid and all that kind of thing. There's a lot of great like these self reflexive moments in his movies that you can't help but laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. That said, I should, because I usually am the one that does voice some dissent on this show, and I don't want to, I've been telling this to everyone that asked me about the movie. I love the movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. However, it's not a perfect movie. The movie has flaws. And some of them fairly major, but it's so charming in no small part. Robert Downey Jr.'s work is so charming that you kind of don't care, you know, just like Batman Begins had what I think is a fairly lousy ending. You didn't care because the movie was so good and charming up to that point. You know, you'd forgive it that. And Iron Man's the same way.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and it's a good analogy because he was going for, Jon Favreau said that Batman Begins was a big influence on the
film. You know,
yes,
and you can tell that in the fact that he took it seriously, and yet he still had fun. He still kept the sense of fun about the premise.
Yeah, he wasn't a prisoner. You know, a lot of times what happens is that people are making a movie strictly for the fanboys, which just is not a smart way to make a movie. If you're going to do it 100% for them, that's fine for a comic book for a movie. You got to make it for everyone.
It is a different point of view from the Batman character, because Batman, obviously, he lives a life of luxury, much like Tony Stark. You actually see Tony Stark really enjoying.
you never see Bruce Wayne enjoying.
But that's a major part of that character.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne is very somber, and he got his family. He's got his father's business, unfortunately, through a bad way, while Tony inherited it, you know, through natural causes, if you will. I mean, they both have that same, I guess you could say, the playboy or the wealth characteristic. but through different means.
Right. They're both worth billions. Actually, I was reading something the other day about fictional characters that Tony Stark's actually not worth quite as much as Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne
is actually worth more.
That's right. I read that too. That's right.
I think it's like $7 billion to $3 billion or something.
Yeah.
Like
did you read this in Forbes or something?
Yeah, this is the Forbes. I think Forbes or Fortune.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was.
I'm glad to see them tackling these issues. With all the bad economic news, I'm glad to see them getting some lighthearted stories in there.
Exactly, exactly.
But also, the thing about Iron Man 2 is, I was a comic book nerd, but I never really read a whole lot of Iron Man. I read a couple. But I remember that it wasn't ever a particularly humorous book. It was always kind of dull and not, it was not the most appealing in terms of writing. So it's cool that they kind of switched it up and made what was a fairly serious comic book into pretty funny movie and really enjoyable.
I wonder how much of that was a product of Downey's casting.
Well, maybe a little bit. I don't know. But there's some, you know, there's just some stuff in terms of the script with the really funny visual gags with the robots that just got huge reactions in the theater I was in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
Favreau is. It's great. I mean, his sensibility with this material is just outstanding.
I couldn't agree more.
And just the strength of casting, I think everyone shines. I mean, I've heard that people say that Bridges doesn't come across. I thought he came across as incredibly imposing.
He was great.
Just that opening shot of him on that magazine cover looking down at the globe, I thought, oh, that's perfect.
That's perfect. I thought Terrence Howard was very good because I noticed a couple people in reviews have written him off, and I thought Gwyneth Paltrow was actually better than usual.
Gwyneth Paltrow was hot. And I'm saying that as a shallow man, but I've never necessarily thought that way before about Gwyneth Paltrow.
I think she should stick to this genre, because I liked her. I know I'm probably in the minority here, but I thought she was good in the Sky Captain movie. You know, I think she should stick to this genre.
But there's something to be said. I mean, great actors, occasionally they want to do, you know, popular movies. You know, they're really kind of distinguished actors. And these parts, you know, sure they can be played by a large majority of working actors, you know, fairly functional actors. There's something to be said when you get like the great actors up there to do these kinds of roles. I mean, it enhances it in a way. I mean, it's not just, I felt that way about this movie. It's not just showing off, look at our star power. I thought that they each brought, you know, personality and brought a lot to it, you know.
I agree. I just think there's something thrilling about watching Downey there with him. It's terrible because I can't picture. I mean, he said something that he wanted to do 15 of these movies if it was possible.
Right.
Well, they're already trying to rush it into production for the next one.
Yeah. I can't see anyone else playing this character. I wouldn't want to see anyone else playing Tony Stark. I mean, I think he owns the role.
I think he owns this interpretation of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a definite interpretation of it. I mean, it's his own.
Yeah. Definitely.
Go ahead, Chris.
They toned down the character for the movie too. In the comic book, he's an alcoholic.
I think that's coming.
That's coming, actually.
Yeah, they've mentioned that maybe they'll tackle that in the second movie, but and of course they do show him drinking quite a bit.
He's having a great time, like on the private jet with Terrence Howard, and then they have these stewardesses, and they have the stripper pole, like, come out of the ground.
Yeah. There will be a scene in Iron Man 2 where he wakes up in some strange kid's bedroom.
oh, God!
I'm sorry. Did I go too far there?
No,
you party pooper, you.
It's a wonderful movie. Anyone that has any thoughts about Iron Man, I appreciate everyone out there participating in our chat room, but you can give us a call, too. We won't bite.
Give us a call.
718-508-9477. You know
cool
what's interesting? Yeah, go ahead, man.
One of the cool things about it is it's actually good for all the other movies that are coming out this summer, too, I think. Not just that it made a lot of money, because movies always make a lot of money in May, as you know, they always do. But I think it's good because audiences got out there and they saw a movie that didn't really disappoint them, kind of like the opening summer movies and the May movies have in the last couple years. It was actually a good movie, so people are going to try and recreate that really awesome movie experience over and over again.
It set the bar right off the bat. Yeah, it really did.
Yes, it did.
And Chris, you brought that up to me in a conversation yesterday. And we're used to kind of early May. We're used to kind of lackluster, you know, the Roland Emmerich style summer movies.
We got that back in March.
Yeah, of that ilk. Yeah, he can keep March, but it's, so it's good that we start out the summer with a movie that actually works.
Yeah, it's been a couple of summers since we had a really good movie open up the floodgate.
It's actually been five. I went and looked at it. In my opinion, it's been since 2003, since May was actually had, you know, some quality material in it. The Mays in the last 4 or 5 years have just been really, really lousy, and I just didn't even notice until I went back and looked.
Yeah, because last year you had Spider-Man 3. The year before that, Monster-in-Law, I guess, or...
The year before that, you had Poseidon.
Oh, Poseidon.
Da Vinci Code, kind of weak.
Yeah.
You know, like, big event movies, they made a lot of money, but they're just a little bit weak. 2005, you had Star Wars 3, Longest
Yard. That was actually better than the first two, so I had no problem with that, so...
But even still, yeah, I mean, it was better than the first two, but it's not the kind of movie that, I don't know, to me...
It's
anyway,
more obligation than anything else to go see.
A little bit.
Yeah, you walk out of that movie and you say, hey, that wasn't as much of a disappointment.
Right.
Yeah, and you never thought you'd say that 10 years ago.
Yeah, which isn't a replacement for praise.
No. You just go out and say it's not as bad. He got better, but not
right.
by much.
Yeah,
right.
It's unfortunate. So I mean, I can't really count that, even though that was the big kicker for that year.
But it's there are reports. I think Iron Man is a great movie. I think because it's got personality. It's just not another one of those kinds of movies out there. It really has a point of view and a sense of a fun about itself that I really dug. It's just a cool movie. But there are reports now that this summer will not be as big as last summer. They're expecting as much as a 5% drop.
Really?
Yeah, because if you consider last summer was Spider-Man 3, Shrek 3.
Pirates of the Caribbean
Pirates 3. There's big tentpole sequels that are just global phenomenons. So they're looking at, and they have Indiana Jones, they have Iron Man, they have Batman, and a couple of question marks in there. Hancock, I think, will be huge. Sex and the City, too. But they not the kind of power of last summer. And I guess you can see it with Iron Man. I mean, Iron Man made $104 million, but on its opening weekend the same time last year, Spider-Man made $160-some million.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
which
I think, don't you think next week? All right. Well, here's the thing. What do the two of you think of Speed Racer's prospects?
Prospects in terms of making money?
Yeah, making money. Because there's a question mark on that, Chris.
I can't see that Speed Racer is going to make a lot of money, and I think that's unfortunate because I kind of want to see it, even though early reviews are not so great. I've got a lot of faith in the Wachowski brothers, even though I probably shouldn't. But it's just leftover faith from that first Matrix movie, which is among the best sci-fis, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Speed Racer looks like an interesting movie. And again, you kind of got to remember, we can't really look at it too seriously. It's a children's show.
It's a family movie. It's being billed as a family movie.
Yeah, so we kind of got to look at it the same way we look at, you know, Transformers. This is for children.
Oh, in your record on Transformers?
Yeah, but Transformers does feel a little kiddish, but... A lot of adult geeks went to see Transformers, too.
Well, a lot of adult geeks are going to go see Speed Racer.
Yeah, but I think that Speed Racer might open number one next week, but I don't think by much. I think Iron Man will hold firm, especially among the adult crowd. I think a lot of kids, you know, I think Speed Racer could be like akin to like a Horton Hears a Who or something. I mean, all the kids.
Is that what we're comparing it to? Is that what we really think this movie is geared towards, that age group?
Yeah,
I think they're gearing it towards a different age group, but I think that the movie is made for the younger age group.
Yeah.
I mean, gearing it towards that older group. They're advertising it that way, but again, we're talking about a movie that was made from a children's show. It looks like a children's show, you know? I mean,
and all the advanced reviews say that the disappointment that's being expressed is that it's very kiddish.
Yeah.
Wow.
Children need movies to go see, too.
Yeah, but Speed Racer was not one of the ones. I think, 'cause Speed Racer, I think, is more of a nostalgic thing for, like,
right.
Generation X and Generation Y. I don't see kids today you know, Speed Racer must seem rather tame to them.
Well, it looks like a live-action cartoon. I mean,
but it does, and I think that was the goal of the filmmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it has a good weekend in it. But I think that Iron Man will stay firm. I think it might open number one, but I think the Speed Racer,
I gotta disagree, Jamie. I'm gonna go on record and say I think Iron Man will keep number one. Speed Racer will come a very close two, but
yeah.
That's my prediction. So
you know, Speed Racer is not number one next weekend. It's considered a dud.
Oh, absolutely. Even if it is number one, and there are situations where it could be number one and be considered a dud. I don't know what the price tag on that movie was.
It's a lot. I'll just say that. I know
it's
a lot.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a lot. Yeah.
Well, we don't differ that much because we're both saying that Iron Man and Speed Race will be close. We're just
exactly.
We're just switching on which one will be number one.
Yeah.
But I don't think the Speed Racer will have the legs that Iron Man does.
No.
Will.
No, I don't either.
The week after that is Prince Caspian.
Prince Caspian's a question mark too. I like the first one. It was like something I didn't think I would like. The first Chronicles of Narnia, but it was much better than I thought it would be. So I am curious about that, but I don't know how that's going to do amidst all these other films.
Again, you know, it's family market. So then, we've had several guests on this show who have told us, there's a huge market out there for. Family movies, and it just doesn't get filled, you know? So I would think that movie's going to do pretty well, actually.
I think so. I mean, I'm just...
Yeah, and I'm not... And for people in the chat room, I'm not hating on Horton Hears a Who. I just mentioned it.
Wait.
I did say anything about it. I just mentioned the title of it. But I haven't even seen it, so I wouldn't have any right to criticize it. So I wasn't doing that. I'm sure it's a delightful movie. Actually, I heard that it was very good. Did you see Horton Hears a Who, Jerry?
Yeah, I saw Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. I mean, you know, I'm sure it's better than the Grinch one, I guess, that they made, and obviously the Cat in the Hat. It's much better
right.
than those.
Right.
But I don't know. I guess before Iron Man, that was the most successful movie of the year, Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah,
probably. So Prince Caspian, I think, is vying for the same audience as Speed Racer. That's why I think the Speed Racer is a one weekend kind of movie, because after that you have Indiana Jones, and that's like all ages. I mean, adults are going to bring their kids; they're going to come by themselves. You know, it's just going to be the behemoth of the summer. And I read some interesting thoughts. A lot of people have compiled their top 10 list. In terms of box office gross for what the summer movies will be. Most of them are unanimous in the idea that Indiana Jones will take number one. And a lot of them say that The Dark Knight will be number two.
I think that's interesting.
I mean, this is the fight of the summer. This is the battle of the summer, really, between the two of these movies.
Entertainment Weekly actually put Chronicles of Narnia at number two.
Really?
Doesn't even put Dark Knight till number six. You want me to read? I got the list here.
Yeah, read that to me.
Read it to us, please.
Number one, of course, Indiana Jones. They predict $355.9 million. Number two, Chronicles of Narnia. I'm sorry?
That's pretty exact.
Yeah, that's a little... I don't know how they come up with that, but I don't know. That number seems about right, 355. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it made that. Number two, Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, 310. Number three, Hancock. That's a pretty... I don't know about that. If I was making a list like this, I would have a hard time putting an unproven movie like Hancock, even if it does have the most...
Yeah,
stuff in
it does have Will Smith, though, so...
Yes, it does.
And it's his weekend, and it's the biggest weekend
he owns that weekend.
And it's a superhero movie. I mean, it said, in fact, that's what they say here. Number three, Hancock, 280. Will Smith, superhero, July 4th weekend, enough said. And that's, I guess that's why people are picking it.
Of course, you could put the sentence Wild Wild West in there, too. And that would
that's
throw that,
true.
That theory off.
Even though you and I went and saw that movie and laughed our asses off.
You and I saw that together in L.A., and we loved it, actually.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And I've watched it since then. I think the movie holds up. That's one of the ones I never understood why people make fun of it so much. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Number four, WALL-E. Number five, Iron Man. Number six, The Dark Knight. Number 7, Kung Fu Panda. Number 8, The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. Number 9, The Incredible Hulk. Number 10, Tropic Thunder.
Huh.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting. Does The Dark Knight seem like it's getting a little bit overhyped? Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound like one of these fanboys that says, oh, it's overhyped, I'm not going to go see it. Don't get me wrong. Other than Indiana Jones, my number 2 movie on the must-see list of
right.
the summer is Dark Knight. I want to see it. I think it looks great, and I think it probably will be. But does it seem like they're giving a little bit too much? We're seeing a little bit too much of this movie. We're hearing a little bit too much about it.
Yeah, it's a real timing issue. The new trailer came out today, which is another trailer that looks fantastic. It's on our blog. If anybody wants to see it, the link is up on the Movie Geeks United blog. But it's a little bit about timing. I mean, I know that they want to expose this new trailer to everyone that's seeing these big movies in the month of May.
Yeah.
But, you know, oversaturation. But at the same time, I don't know that that'll affect it too much.
I think everyone wants to see I mean, it's almost a morbid
I just want to see a Batman. I just want to see a Batman movie.
I want to see The Dark Knight just on based on the trailer that you posted today earlier and what I've seen and what I've read. I want to see this because it's like what I was talking about in my review for Iron Man. It's very respectful to the Batman mythology. And I'm back in logged into the chat room. You have to forgive me, my computer connection died out there. So I am in the chat room. If people are wondering what happened, I'm sorry about my.
Well, there are some things. I mean, The Dark Knight has already had 3 trailers out. There's new like viral campaigns throughout the internet that you practically hear morsels of information about every single day.
And we're not talking about we're talking about July. This thing's coming like late July. This thing is isn't it late
yeah.
July?
Yeah, it's July
18th.
Yeah, okay, so mid-July. That's a ways off. And in May, beginning of May, we've already had 3 trailers, all this viral campaign stuff. One of the stars died, so that's got, you know, extra heat on the movie. It's just an amazing amount of energy surrounding this movie.
There are things that they're not revealing. There's some things they're not revealing the face of Two-Face.
In this new trailer... If you're familiar with it, I was kind of shocked how much they showed about Two-Face, though.
No, they show a silhouette of the other side of his face.
They show Aaron Eckhart, and there's a scene there, dude, that is all sorts of, spoilers, so I'll say that.
No, I mean, I watched it since I posted the trailer. I watched it many times.
Yeah.
I even heard an interview with Aaron Eckhart, and he said you won't see... the full character of Two-Face until it opens.
Yeah, you won't see the full, but it looks like something in there that...
Because the image is too graphic to put in a trailer.
Right, they can't tone it down. But you
yeah.
can see what Jerry's saying is there is a shot of Two-Face after the transformation, but you're only seeing the unaffected side of his face.
No, but okay,
you're seeing
okay.
like a silhouette of the bad side.
No, not that. There's a scene where there's some sort of liquid being poured. And then Aaron Eckhart saying no.
Yes, that's in there too. But there's no, you don't see the destruction.
No, you don't see the destruction, but if you're familiar with the mythology of that character, it's like...
I'm not talking about the mythology, I'm talking about an actual image of the burned flesh on his face.
I'm talking about, like, it seems like they show, not just, but what's going to happen to him, that's all I'm saying.
The thing that they do show in the trailer is probably...
Eve is backing me up in the chat room, I think, because she's one of my bosses, seeing Dave.
I'm just telling you what I saw from the trailer,
Aaron
Eckhart himself said about the trailer. But so I'm going through the people that actually played the part and made it happen. But if you want to talk about spoilers in the trailer actually gives away the biggest spoiler that takes place in the entire movie.
And what would that be?
It's the thing that connects...
Hold up. I don't want to hear any
spoilers. I don't want to hear it either. I mean...
Are you referring to something that happens on a rooftop?
Yes.
Okay.
And it makes sense because it's what connects Batman with Two-Face.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, let's change subject.
That's a little bit cryptic, but yeah.
Yeah, that is very cryptic, but...
We're talking about a movie that comes out in July, so it literally would be a spoiler, not only for...
Yeah.
Spoiler and, for And, I mean, obviously the... Obviously, if you watch the trailer, I mean, there's something that connects the two of those characters, and that they're both after the same girl.
But even that moment, I'm not sure that is entirely a spoiler. You know, that could go. We've seen scenes like that in other movies where it didn't end up.
Yeah, yeah.
So who knows? Who knows? I hope not, because I same thing this morning, and it would be unfortunate if they gave away, you know, a major turn like that in the movie,
right?
Or in the trailer.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just after
this has been rumored that this event occurs in the Dark Knight, and it's going to be the big shocker in the Dark Knight, and for them to actually show what seems to be a piece of that moment, everybody will know what I'm talking about if it actually comes to fruition in the actual movie. I don't know if it does or not. So
I don't know if they'll do it. What I've heard is that they're not. What is it? The movie 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah, isn't that what they've been saying? That it's so, that
he doesn't want to cut anything out of the movie now, Nolan. He doesn't want to edit anything out now.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm on his side because, by the way, has anyone noticed Chris Nolan not making bad movies? Hasn't made one yet?
No, he really hasn't.
I mean, and even Insomnia, which I saw, and it was on the tails of Memento, and I was a little bit disappointed when I saw it. I've gone back and watched it a couple times, and it's just one of those movies like Zodiac that you've got to watch again and really pick up. There's a lot going on there. It's a really well-crafted movie. This guy can make a 2-hour and 40 Batman movie, in my opinion. Like, if anybody can do it.
Right.
Let's let Chris Nolan have a crack at it.
Hey,
yeah,
he's got my respect, especially after, like, the Batman Begins and the Prestige. He can do whatever he wants.
If anyone has any thoughts, you guys can call into the show.
Are you logged into the switchboard, Jamie?
I am. Are you?
Yeah.
Are you seeing anything?
I'm seeing you type away under the...
Yeah, I'm typing in the chat room. I'm keeping communication with my peeps in the chat room.
Okay, so wait, are we both logged in?
Yeah, but you got to control the switchboard. I mean, I'm just telling people.
Oh, okay,
all right.
I didn't know. I was keeping with the...
I'm inviting our listeners to actually call into the show.
Okay, I thought that was a given. Okay, no one's calling in though right now. I mean, it's just the three of us. I see no one.
I know. This is great. I mean, it's like movie geeks masturbating. But if anyone wants to join in on the conversation, you can always call.
I didn't really need to know about the masturbation, but thanks.
You know it too well. Don't be shy.
Yeah, well, no. I mean,
718-508-9477 is the number.
Anyone people think we're having a East Coast circle jerk?
I'd like to put in a enough with the circle jerk talk here.
Yeah.
But to stay on the subject of sex, this top 10 list omits a couple of movies, and one of the ones which I think might be one of the big sleepers of the summer can easily replace two or three of these movies on this top 10 list is the Sex and the City movie. And
you're absolutely
right.
Wrong.
I am not interested in seeing the movie. My girlfriend loves this show. And I tried to be the good boyfriend. I tried to sit and watch a couple episodes with her. It's just, I just can't do it. It's not my thing. That said, there is, I don't know a lot of chicks that don't like that show and don't, not just like it, don't think it's the greatest show ever made.
Oh, they love it.
Like we saw last summer with Devil Wears Prada, when that female audience really wants to see something, they got a shit ton of money. Like someone the other day was talking about, everybody in Hollywood just sort of shakes their head and says, what the hell happened? But I wouldn't be surprised if this movie crept into the top 10.
It will. And you've touched on it, because what other movie is there this summer that really caters to the female crowd exclusively,
mm-hmm.
you know? Everything else, the ladies are going to be dragged by their boyfriends to see some of these movies.
Yeah,
not all of them. I think they're interested in, you know, some of the big tentpole releases, just like the men. But yeah, you know, this is like the behemoth of May, I think, outside of Iron Man and the Indiana Jones movie. I think it's going to be a top five grosser.
Yeah,
I see this one being very popular because, you know, there aren't a lot of films that are catering to that audience. So I definitely see that. And the other film I see maybe like that is Mamma Mia.
Yeah, could be.
Mamma Mia could be the sleeper hit. You know, I consider Sex and the City to be a given that that's going to be a hit, but Mamma Mia could be the big sleeper hit. That could actually be more akin to the Devil Wears Prada, you know, ironically enough, being Meryl Streep.
Right.
You know, the movie that comes out of nowhere that really doesn't have that kind of expectation.
Well, the Devil Wears Prada had expectation, just not that it would that it would clobber Superman Returns. No one expected that.
Oh, I don't think any. I don't think anyone had any expectations that Devil Wears Prada would be up to $100 million grosser.
Well, the book was very popular. The book was a big deal when it came out. I don't think it knew $100 million, but that it would do that well, but that it would demolish Superman in the process, though.
Yeah.
That caught me off guard. And also, that would actually be a really good movie.
Well, it didn't
demolish
anything. I mean, it was a pretty slow burn kind of in terms of ticket sales. It just fucking stayed in the theaters forever.
Yeah.
That's important. You know, that's important.
Absolutely.
That's more important than anything. If you can stay in that long.
Yeah, that's the best.
I mean, if you can stay that the whole summer, like I guess there's something about Mary or something. Not just like make all your money the first weekend or the second weekend, but do it like last like more than a month. That's incredible in this day and age.
Stamina is very important. Ask any of my ex-girlfriends. It's just a. I don't know what that means.
let me mention some of the other.
Yeah, please.
Dude,
was Wally on that list?
Wally is on the top 10 list. They got it at number 4, and I wouldn't argue with that.
Maybe a little higher. I mean,
right?
Yeah, who knows? You can't argue with Pixar.
Yeah.
Stuff like it's going to be on the top 10. It's just about where. It's going to be on the top 5, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out at all.
Some of the other high profile picks that aren't on the list. The Step Brothers, the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly movie, which, again, easy to kind of count out, but if you look at his track record, Will Ferrell movies make a ton of money, and there's not a lot of comedies for it to compete with.
Which movie is that? I'm sorry.
When does that open, though? When does that...
Step Brothers with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. Adam McKay movie, the same guy that made Talladega Nights. Not that Will Ferrell movie needs any further explanation.
Right, but the last Will Ferrell movie... Semi-Pro didn't really light up the box office.
No, it didn't, but the one before that did. And like Adam Sandler, who, you know, he can be hit and miss sometimes, and all of a sudden he comes out and got a hit again.
Right.
Will Ferrell's very much the same way. That comes out.
He makes hits with awful movies. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. July 25th, that comes out, so...
Well, that comes out the same day as the X-Files, too.
That's the next one on my list.
Yeah.
I think that's a big possibility because people are hungry. There are fans, and I'm very curious to see what they do with a new X-Files movie.
Yeah. It seems
I'm
like what they're going to do, though, is that's a recipe that I can't believe they're going to change very much at all. Like, you know, not going to be a lot of surprises in the X-Files movie, I don't think.
I think the only surprise is it's a standalone movie. It doesn't have anything to do with the mythology storyline.
Oh, is that right?
It has nothing to do with that. It's going to be a standalone, like a standalone episode, essentially.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Also on the list, Hellboy.
I think that could, because I think he has the critical... support because of Pan's Labyrinth and to a lesser extent because of Hellboy, but I do see that one doing pretty well because that's gained a huge following on DVD.
Yeah, first one only made about $54 million in the theater, but yeah, like you said, made a lot of money on DVD. It wasn't a bad movie either.
No, it's not a bad movie at all. Before Spider-Man 2, and I know you don't like Spider-Man 2, I would say Hellboy is like one of the better comic book adaptation movies in the post-Brian Singer age, just because here's someone who comes along, respects the source material, but gives it it has his own directorial style, and does wonders with it.
Yeah, and it's not a hugely successful comic book. You're not jumping off a platform like Spider-Man or Batman. You know, it's something that you kind of got to sell to people a little bit.
Right.
I think it'll be a modest success. I don't think it'll lose money. I think it'll make a little money. I don't think it'll be blockbuster, but I think, and I don't know why it has to be a blockbuster necessarily. I think he makes movies rather inexpensively comparatively to other directors. I think it's going to make money. He's about to embark on the biggest journey of his career, which is The Hobbit.
Yeah, the two Hobbit films.
Yeah, which McKellen has already expressed interest that he's been approached and he wants to do it. He just hasn't signed on to return as Gandalf yet. But
he's basically in it. He wants.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, Del Toro
said
he wants everyone from the movies in this film. So
that's going to be a major project, man.
Mm-hmm.
That that's when he needs to make the blockbuster right there.
Well, I don't think he's got that of all the living directors, if Jackson isn't going to do it, Del Toro probably is the only one who could possibly really do that.
And honest to goodness, before Lord of the Rings, we didn't know that Peter Jackson could make a blockbuster movie.
Oh, well, you know why they got Peter Jackson. And they got him for dirt cheap. That's what a friend of mine who worked there, they got him because they said the price tag, we could get him for all three movies. We got him for a great price, so...
And plus, he was the one that came in with the concept and the vision. And
yeah, he has incredible vision.
Yeah, and while his movies didn't make a lot of money before that, they're pretty good, even when they're extremely low budget. You know.
Yeah, but he could be considered akin to Del Toro in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Oh yeah, Heavenly Creatures and Dead Alive, and there's a lot of similarities there.
Originally, when Peter Jackson said he wasn't going to do The Hobbit, they went to Sam Raimi, was the big thing. Everybody was saying Sam Raimi was going to do it because he was done with the Spider-Man series. Nothing against Sam Raimi. I just think that Del Toro is a little bit more suited to this material.
Yeah,
Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
So I was happy to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love Guru, also not on a lot of top 10 lists.
I saw the trailer the other night. I got to be honest with you. I'd rather go see Get Smart that day.
Well,
yeah.
Also not on a lot of lists. Are those two going up against each other?
That's one of the big contests this summer to see who will win that day.
I think Get Smart wins.
I think Get Smart wins. It has
alone.
A better trailer.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the opposing view here. I think I'm not saying that Love Guru is going to be a big hit, but I just feel like maybe it'll pull a bigger crowd than Get Smart.
Now let me ask you that. Do you honestly think that? Because
I think
it looks. I wish there's this talk Mike Myers is going to go do Austin Powers again, or I'd rather see another Wayne's World personally because I thought the last Austin Powers movies was kind of lame. But I got to say the Love Guru just doesn't look that funny.
I think that'll be a big story too. I think if Steve Carell, if he outdoes Mike Myers. That's going to be a headline.
Yeah,
you know?
That will be.
It's going to be like a torch passed kind of thing, or is he the new the comedy reigning king, or I think they're going to spin it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see either of these movies in this summer because we've said this before about this summer. There's so much going on. There's going to be movies that don't do very well, but there's going to probably be a lot of movies that don't do badly, but also aren't. Huge successes. I think both of these are going to fit into that category, really, ultimately.
I have faith in
Mike Myers. Mike Myers is a funny guy, and again, not really making a lot of movies that don't make money. You have to go back pretty far to find a Mike Myers vehicle that didn't really pull in money, if you're not talking about View from the Top, which he was just a supporting character.
Oh, what about The Cat in the Hat? Did that make money?
Cat in the Hat was pretty successful movie.
It was just bloody awful.
I could be wrong on that, but I thought it was.
It's one of those movies that did really well just based on what it is.
Yeah.
Cat in the Hat, but could have done much better had it been a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That's
it's important to come out with a good movie.
Yeah, it just can't make money, enough money to get by. It actually has to be something that we'll remember in a couple of years.
Yeah. That's true. You both know I agree. Also on this list, The Happening. This movie's starting to look really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Against all odds, motherfucker is sucking me into another one of his movies.
I know. I'm talking about like a con.
Yeah. I love The Sixth Sense. I think it's one of the movies, if you had to pick 100 movies from the last, however many years, it's one of those movies that stands out in the years.
Right.
And it holds up. Signs, likewise, but other than that,
I liked Unbreakable.
Yeah, that's got a fan base. I know I got a friend.
The first three
our
of those.
Friend Mark loved that movie too, but.
I love Signs. I would take Signs over Sixth Sense, even though there's nothing wrong with Sixth Sense. I just like the depth of Signs. I like that it's about a man that lost his faith and he goes through this experience, and it's the whole character arc that I enjoy a lot about it.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson's a great movie star. You watch him and you think, God, he's an actor. But
That was the last
thing
time,
that, the thing that I liked about Signs 2 is that there was not a surprise ending. It turned out to be an alien invasion.
Yeah.
You know, you're waiting for, okay, what's the other explanation that's gonna come out? You know, like the village, you know, that would really disappoint him.
Well, the village didn't disappoint anyone because the ending was, you know, leaked online like a year before it came out. It's just no one thought, everyone thought that ending was a hoax. You know, there's no way that could be the real ending of the movie. And you're watching it, and you're just like, oh, my God, this is the real ending of the movie. And you're just like, this is the most retarded thing I've ever seen.
I never read that leak, and I still saw it coming. So,
Anthony T. said that he's not buying the con this time. He says that he gets the feeling that the happening is the same thing as Signs.
Yeah, as Signs. Not as Signs, or the lady. The lady in the water was nothing to write home about.
It was actually the opposite. It's the kind of thing that you write home about and tell everyone not to fucking go see it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you really want to play, you know, like Paul Revere, sure.
Yeah. Dear Home, this movie sucks.
Yeah. My thing with The Happening is, though, he's already sort of giving away a little bit of, in an ending, in an interview, so.
Well, I think that, Chris, you brought up a good point that this is his first R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what he can do with that. I mean,
Mark Wahlberg's apparently really happy with it. He's seen it, and
he said it's the best experience he ever had shooting a movie. I heard that.
I'm always skeptical.
He said that right after
they finished
filming.
Yeah.
But now that he's seen the movie, he says that M. Night Shyamalan is one sick guy. So whatever that means, should be pretty interesting. Like I said, unfortunately, against all odds, this guy's pulled me back into his web of lies.
Yeah, he's good at that. He's very good at that. He manages to get us all to go see his movies.
And the only other movie that kind of stuck out to me, because I know they want it to be a big success, is Wanted, the Angelina Jolie vehicle. And I say vehicle because in every shot of the movie, apparently, she's hanging out of a vehicle.
Yeah.
Does this look horrible, or is it just me?
I think it looks like a lot of fun. It just looks fun. I don't think... I'm curious about it, because it's got McAvoy in it, and it's got everyone in it. I'm curious.
I think it looks like what it's going to be, a kind of a disposable, fun movie.
Yeah.
It almost seems like an intentional kind of B-movie with A-list...
Well, isn't that what a lot of our movies are, though, in the last couple of years? B-movies, though, with supposedly A-list talent?
Right.
That's really what a majority of the films we go see are.
But there's something to be said about that. I mean, even Scorsese considered The Departed a B-movie.
I wish all B-movies could be that good.
Right. I mean,
no,
I
love
B-movies. You can make a great B-movie, yeah.
B-movies are the staple of... a lot of the great genres and a lot of the great films we love are really considered B-movies. I have no problem with that.
A staple of a lot of summer fare, too.
Yeah, I mean...
The summer fare that we love the most.
And, I'm just going back to summer fare, I was watching one of the great documentaries last night, The Shark Is Still Working, and just talk about, before that movie, most summer movies were just considered B...
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't nothing special, nothing to write home about. So
it was garbage town, basically.
Yeah.
Summer was a dumping ground, much like the first quarter of the year is now for us.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that today, actually, because it's interesting. It's amazing to me, actually, that we even talk about movies around springtime, because every year it's like this. Springtime, occasionally you get some good movies that come out, you know, or exciting movies like Grindhouse or Hot Fuzz last year, but typically it's just this... It's just so exciting when summer comes. There's like you can feel it in the air in terms of movie fans.
There's
something on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, it's March has gotten better lately with V for Vendetta one year, this year The Bank Job or something like that. You do get some good films even in the independent art house set, like in January and February. But no, it's still like January is... The Dumping Ground, one of our guest films that we had a couple weeks ago. His films always get dumped in January. So,
Yeah.
I noticed I didn't even have to really say his name, but you all knew what I was talking about.
Right. I think I do.
Okay, great. That's wonderful. Thanks, Gene. Thanks for helping out. Thanks for calling in. And all right, 300 last year. Eve is right. We had 300 was changed the dynamic a lot.
Yeah, yeah. At least for a year.
There's always going to be movies that are, you know, successful because somebody has to be on top. And in that movie, apparently, it was all men.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this year's 300 was that 3000 BC or whatever, that 2000 or
10,000 BC.
Yeah, I was off by 7,000 years.
Yeah, I wish you were off by more than that.
Cloverfield did pretty well at the beginning of the year too.
Yeah.
Cloverfield, yeah, changed the I like Cloverfield. I want to go back and watch it again one of these days, but that was very rare that in January you'd have two movies, Cloverfield and Rambo.
Rambo did well enough. Because if you look at the gross, it was $49 million in the U.S. But what people don't understand is, I mean, he only spent $25 million to make it. But then marketing and everything on top of that, I mean, I'm sure they're still showing red. But you know, that movie will make money. I mean, come the time that it comes released on DVD this month, and, you know, it's not a failure.
You know, it's not at all. And it's one of the better Rambo movies, actually. One of the ones one of the ones I really like since the first one.
It delivered what you want from Rambo.
Yeah, I mean,
you
got what
Rambo
you wanted.
Movies.
I mean, maybe more than you wanted, maybe.
Actually, that's not true. What I want from Rambo movies is for them to go away. So.
Okay, all right, well, maybe he'll go away now.
Empress Eve, like 27 dresses. She said that did well. All those, like Maid of Honor, even opening up this weekend against Iron Man. It did like 15.5 or 16 or something, didn't it?
Let me tell you something about Maid of Honor. I kept hoping the Cloverfield monster would rip into that fucking movie and like rip them to shreds.
Really?
Oh my god, dude. Let me tell you something. I didn't see this 27 Dresses Eve, but it can't be as bad as this monstrosity that's being like put on the American people. This movie was wretchedly bad. This movie
Maid of Honor. Maid of Honor is a monstrosity being put upon the American.
Let me tell you something. I know Patrick Dempsey. Look, I'm happy for him. You know that he's got this like Grey's Anatomy has given him this whole new lease on life and everything. But I've seen this movie before. It's called My Best Friend's Wedding.
Right.
And it's just and I think it was on the Soup the other night. They made fun of the trailer for Maid of Honor. They kept showing these other movies that it like you know made you know is inspired from My Best Friend's Wedding. I forget what the 27 Dresses even. And it's insipid. I mean, it's really bad. Even for a romantic comedy, it's really below
Doesn't it depend largely? I mean, all those romantic comedies, and Chris, one of our first shows you spoke to this, they're all the same formula. But doesn't it all depend upon the chemistry between the two leads, I mean, in the long run?
Absolutely.
Do they have any chemistry?
No. I like both actors, and I especially like Michelle Monaghan. She was good in Gone Baby Gone and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but it's just not here.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's just something about it you're like watching, and you're like, there's something really off in this movie.
You know, is this a big surprise? Like, if I got into a time machine and went back 20 years and found Jerry of 20 years ago and said, hey, you know the guy that's in Can't Buy Me Love and Loverboy? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, in 20 years, he's going to make another movie. You going to go see it? You would be like, no.
No, but...
And if you asked me that question a year ago, I don't care. He's back in Grey's Anatomy. Who cares?
You know, it's just not very good, though. I mean, and I don't know. I know Can't Buy Me Love is very popular because, like, my roommate's friend wrote the movie, but...
I used to watch those movies.
I mean, it's just not...
I wonder how much of the Maid of Honor money, realistically, every year there's a movie like this that comes out the same day as a big blockbuster, and it makes pretty good, you know, a month ago, that would have been a number one movie, but it just happened to come out against, you know, a superhero movie, so it's number two with $17 million or whatever. But how much of that was people that couldn't get into Iron Man? Or how much of it actually was dates that, like, the guy is just fuming because he can hear the speakers from Iron Man over, you know, like, blowing his movie out of the water.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, I don't have anything against Patrick Dempsey because, and Sci-Fi Talk said it too. I liked Enchanted a lot.
Oh, Enchanted! I actually
raved about
like
it. We both raved about Enchanted on the show. I thought it was a delightful,
fun
movie.
Enchanted was wonderful. This one was just. I know these movies. Yes, they're supposed to be formulaic and everything, but they shouldn't just be so. He's so formulaic and bring nothing new. And it's the sad thing is they're both really good actors.
Well, yeah, I think just like I said, if you don't have the chemistry between the two leads, you don't have any.
It's just not there.
Comedy. You know, rewatching Annie Hall again last week, I was thinking there's never been anyone more perfect for Woody Allen than Diane Keaton.
Yeah,
I mean they just spark one another, and that's what really, outside of the great dialogue and the great writing. That's what really made that movie pop. I mean, if you didn't have that chemistry, Annie Hall wouldn't have worked, even with the great dialogue
and
the inventive direction. You know, that's the do-or-die mark for a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it.
Well, that's okay. I mean, yeah, we're all in agreement there. That's really funny because the movie tries to be like Annie Hall in some ways. There's some scenes, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah,
it's not. It's just not, though. Not very many can.
Yeah, well, movies, romantic comedies anyway, have been trying to be like Annie Hall. Since Annie Hall, they really have. It's just one of those movies that not everybody has seen of the younger generation, but if they did, and then you said, oh, that's the movie that started that, they'd go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, and in a way, Annie Hall, you know, for its time was almost like the anti-romantic comedy, you know, because you had characters dealing with, you know, real kind of psychological issues and intimacy issues and all this kind of stuff. All the psychology started coming into play in it, you know, which gave it a certain depth. That was kind of revolutionary at the time for that kind of movie.
It was. His movies have always been that way. And actually, I said this before, if you look at there's probably five or six basic romantic comedy premises, and for each one of them, if you show me one of those premises, I can point you to a Woody Allen movie that did it first. And not only did it before that movie, but probably literally did it first.
First and did it better.
He's made a career out of making the best romantic comedy that comes out every year until about 5 years ago. So.
Yeah. See, I can forgive a romantic comedy predictability and all that kind of stuff. Just like I said, as long as the two stars just sing in it together, you know, it's... And even a movie that isn't really a good movie, but I enjoy it for its pace and its zip, and the chemistry between the two of them is one fine day.
Right.
I mean, it's not a great movie, but it works for me. It goes by in a flash, and the two leads are extremely appealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't see it in this movie and some of the others. I know there have been a couple this year that people have been complaining about where there's just nothing there. Now, I haven't seen 27 Dresses or what's the other one, P.S. I Love You,
right?
The one with Hilary Swank, which I think would just be revolutionary just given that Hilary Swank is playing a normal girl, which would be worth the price of admission, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But,
that's the first same-sex romantic comedy, right?
I think so. I think you're right.
Two men?
And one of the other ones is dead.
We're going to the toilet with this thing.
Yeah, well, you know.
So I think we all agree, a great start to the summer. You know, Cannes Film Festival starts on the 14th.
Yeah.
So that's going to be big news come next week and a half or so. And, of course, the new Indiana Jones opening up that festival. And some great, great noteworthy films playing in that festival like we expressed last Sunday. Tribeca is wound down this weekend. Wednesday night, we're going to be joined by Keith Ulick, who attended Tribeca, our good friend Keith, and he will give us an update on what he saw there and the best fare this year from that festival. One of the most important American festivals. And, you know, when you think about De Niro starting that festival with his producing partner, Jane Rosenthal, it has generated almost $500 million over the course of 7 years for that New York City area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has.
And in that respect, this festival has succeeded because that was the whole reason for its establishment. Right after 9/11, we need to revive this area of New York City. You know,
mm-hmm.
And New York being, you know, all about culture and that kind of thing. I mean, it fit perfectly. And it's been a big success, so I can't wait to talk to Keith about that. And then there's also, we're in confirmation stages of all people this Wednesday night. He is a beloved television personality. He's just one of the most accomplished personalities in the history of television. You see the awards this man has received and the longevity of his career. And he's turning to movies for the first time. He's directing his first movie. It's called Body of War. It's a documentary. And he will probably be joining us Wednesday. I don't have the official announcement yet, but Phil Donahue might be with us on Wednesday night. So that could be a very interesting episode of Movie Geeks United.
That would be awesome.
We're very excited about it. So what's next for you guys? Do you guys have any movies on the horizon? I mean, outside of what we've discussed that you guys are interested in, or anything you've seen at home that strikes your fancy?
I would say that besides Speed Racer that we were talking about, the David Mamet movie Red Belt and Son of Rambo, of all things.
Son of Rambo.
Yeah.
That looks like a really nice movie.
A very sweet movie.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, you said that Stallone actually made a statement about that. That he'd finally seen it?
No, I have not heard that. Maybe that was Jerry.
No, I haven't heard Stallone say anything about it one way or the other.
Maybe I had a dream about it because I'm so preoccupied with trying to get him on the show. Like, I'm dreaming that I'm having conversations with Stallone since I can't in reality. But
Jerry's desire to see Red Belt, though, I do love a good David Mamet movie, even when it's something like Spartan, which is one of his minor works.
But that has its moments, though, I think.
Yeah.
Did you see, Jerry, or Chris, did you see, because I know you watch it every weekend, did you see Sunday Morning Shootout this morning?
No, I didn't. I haven't watched that in a while, so I haven't kept up with that as much as I should.
I watched it this morning. And I usually never get up to watch it, but Mamet was one of the people being interviewed on it.
Oh, what did he say?
He was very funny. He said, you know, that's what people say about movies, that it's a collaborative art form. But that's only half the sentence. Here's the other half the sentence. Movies are a collaborative art form. Bend over.
He's right. He'll be the first to tell you. Yeah.
He was very funny. And he said, you know, I'm the writer, I'm the director, I'm the producer, you know, I like having the buck stop with me. I don't mind not having anyone to collaborate with.
Thank God, because it's great when you can actually hear, he's one of those directors, even though it's not completely distinctive, if you've seen a couple David Mamet movies, you know when you're watching one. And I'm not just talking about the dialogue, because everybody knows Mamet dialogue.
Yeah.
He does have a distinctive style in terms of direction, too. It's very, movies are very quiet. They're very serious, obviously. And they're really compelling. They've got these weird notes that they hit that are kind of bizarre. And I love it when it works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, you said that you saw The Wackness.
I didn't see The Wackness, no.
I know someone that saw that film, but I can't remember who. Because they're asking about it in the chat room.
No, I haven't seen the Wackness hasn't even come anywhere close to here yet.
Okay. Well, we're going off the air. So we will join you guys on Wednesday night.
Wednesday night,
10 p.m. Thanks for joining us all tonight. We appreciate you being with us, and I'll see everyone back there Wednesday night.
All right.
Have a good time.
All right. Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com is the place to be. Domain names starting at $1.99 and complete web packages at unbeatably low prices. Best of all, if you enter the code MOVIEGEEKS upon checkout, that's MOVIEGEEKS, you'll get an extra 10% off your order. Get a piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.